Today on The Journey.
When there are conflicts going on, what's the real deal? It's not that you didn't put the toilet seat down. That's not the biggest deal. What's the real deal? Hidden issues are really the issue.
What causes conflict in a marriage? Well, sometimes the triggers are in plain sight, and sometimes, maybe even many times, it will take a searchlight to find them. Today, Ron Moore offers that light and the signs you should look for in your marriage. Also, we're offering for a donation of any amount Ron's booklet called In the Beginning, A Biblical View of Sexuality. It's available at ronmoore.org, and I'll have more about it later in the broadcast. Now here's Ron with part two of the message, Let's Fight Fair, on The Journey.
Here's the deal on conflicts. In conflicts, you have three things. You have events. Events are the everyday happenings, things that we can't avoid, things we don't want to avoid, things that go on in our life, everyday happenings. Then there are issues. Issue is the larger topic. Okay, so everyday happenings, think of these as sets and subsets. So you start out with everyday happenings, then you have issues, larger topic, and then here's the real issue, hidden issues, the deeper feelings. So there's an event. There is a larger topic to that event, and there are deeper feelings. And it's the deeper feelings that cause conflict to escalate and people to withdraw and the whole bit. All right, so let's think about the hidden issues. What would be some hidden issues? Past pains, past hurt, insecurity. When there are conflicts going on, what's the real deal? It's not that you didn't put the toilet seat down. That's the event. That's not the biggest deal. What's the real deal? Hidden issues are really the issue. Power. Who's in charge of this relationship? Who's in charge of the money? So an event would be an overdrawn checking account. The issue would be money in marriage, but the hidden issue would be who is really in charge? Who has the power over this thing? Again, issue of control. Caring. Does he really care? Does she really care? The example I gave with getting home late, that could be this one. You're not mad that he got home late. The real issue is you don't care. You are mad that he got home late, but the real issue is caring. Recognition. You don't recognize what I bring to the table. You don't recognize my input into this relationship. Commitment. Are you really committed to this thing? You're going to be here next year or the year after or the year after. Integrity. Are you telling the truth? Are you living the truth? Acceptance. Do you really accept me for who I am? Not for who you want me to be, but for who I am. Power, control, caring, recognition, commitment, integrity, acceptance. We talked about the three things that crater a marriage. Communication, money, and sex. Think of the hidden issues that go with all those. Think of the issue of communication. Communication is power. I can control information. I can demonstrate a care or lack of. By communication, I can go through the whole deal there. Sex, same thing. Many times, sex, and we'll talk about this later, is used as a power play or a control play or a lack of caring. And money, same thing. Who's in charge of the money? Because whoever's in charge of the money, that person has the most power in that regard in the relationship. They have control. So you can see that the hidden issues are critical in the three things that crater a marriage, plus the other things that crater marriages as well. Now, if these are existing in your marriage, there should be some signs that they exist, right? So you say, oh, none of these exist in my marriage. Okay, that'd be great if they don't. Hope they don't. Hope you're right. But here would be some things you could look at to see if they do exist. The first one is called wheel spinning. Same problem is discussed over and over and over and over and over. Now, if there's wheel spinning going on, and so you're discussing something over and over, that just means that something didn't get settled. So when this is going on, you know that there's a conflict that exists, and a conflict has these events and issues and hidden issues. Secondly, trivial triggers. Small issues are blown out of proportion. You were only late for dinner. You've been in time for dinner for 10 days in a row. The traffic was bad. Yeah, you left a little late. Yeah, you could have got it done earlier, but man, just one time. And kaboom, explosion. Trivial trigger. Avoidance. Refusal to deal with the issues. So if the issue's there and you're not dealing with it, again, that's a sign of a hidden issue. And keeping score. Mentally logging wrongs. Or sometimes writing them in your journal. So if those things are going on, then there are some signs of hidden issues that you're not dealing with in the relationship. Expectations. A critical cause of conflict is expectations. Let me just read this. Expectations are derived from family of origin, previous relationship, and cultural influences. We have a tendency to transfer the past into present expectations. It is unrealistic to expect our spouse to meet all our expectations. Think about that. Expectations from family of origin. At Lori's house, her father always mowed the grass. That's what dads do. That's what husbands do. Because in her experience, from the time she remembered looking out the window, her dad mowed the grass. Now, what expectations is she going to bring into our marriage? Her dad comes and mows the grass. There's going to be an expectation there. Her dad fixed everything around the house. So we don't want to call anyone to fix anything, even if it takes 9 trips to Ace Hardware and we got to call Mr. Handyman after all. But I like to do that, not picking on Lori on this. Because someone always tells her. And then she says, why did you use me as an example? All right. Expectations can many times be unrealistic. So you can enter into a relationship or you can live in a relationship with an unrealistic expectation. And if you have an unrealistic expectation for your husband or your wife, unrealistic means it's not going to happen, but you expect it. Think about the issue this is. If you have an expectation that's unrealistic and it's never going to be met, but you have that expectation, man, you're digging a big hole for yourself. If Lori had an expectation that she was going to marry or I could be a millionaire, that's unrealistic. I always tell people in the premarital class, I want you to look at the person sitting next to you. I want you to make this commitment. I would marry them today even if they never changed. Because I cannot depend on anybody changing. Yeah, there's going to be maturity, and yeah, you're going to try to meet each other's needs, and yeah, you're going to grow, but you can't change a person. So there's an expectation there. Any expectation could be unrealistic. Now, certainly there are expectations that need to happen, but it could be an unrealistic expectation. Scott Stanley does great work on this stuff in his book, A Heart of Commitment. And he goes this far. He says, unrealistic expectations are so devastating in a marriage relationship that you need to put them to death and grieve the death and then move on. You need to act like it is someone who died. You have an expectation and you have to treat it as a person you lost. Grieve it. You're not going to have it. They're not coming back. This is from Allender and Longman, Intimate Allies. We make our spouses our saviors when we place them on a pedestal and virtually deify them. This imbues them with power and qualities they cannot offer because it assumes they have passed beyond their own struggle with sin. And that is a powerful statement. Marriage can be a wonderful avenue for intimate relationships when we no longer demand that our marriage restores us to the bliss of Eden. It's an unrealistic expectation to think that our marriage partner is going to be above sin, going to be way farther down the journey than we are, going to be a heavenly creature living here on earth. It just is not going to happen. That's the macro statement. Now take all the micro statements with personality and characteristics and the whole bit, and you got to learn to deal with it. Or you can just be really, really, really frustrated for the rest of your married life. And that's why people say, I ain't going to do this anymore. That's why one half of all first-time marriages end in divorce. Call it a day. Move on. All right. So we've got these issues. Now, let's think of it this way. Here's an issue, and at this point, it's a problem. Let's think about it in a problem situation. Then we'll move to conflict. First, here's some assumptions. One, all couples have problems, so we are not the only couple on earth going through problems. When you come into church, no matter what mask the other person have put on, they got problems just like you do. All couples have problems. It's best to handle the problems as a team. In fact, it is the only way you can handle a problem as a team. The only way you can handle a problem by yourself is to do some unhealthy things like stuff it and avoid it and withdraw and all that. Thirdly, rushed solutions are poor solutions. So now we're still in the problem solving. We've got an issue and we're going to try to work it out. All right? Handling problems. First of all, discuss the problem. What is the problem? Define it. We got to know what the problem is before we can move on. And here's why we do communication right after oneness. We want to know what God says marriage is, and then we want to know how to communicate. Because in this, we want to use the speaker-listener technique. Now, when you are in a heated argument, what would be a good technique to use? Speaker-listener would be really good, right? So use the speaker-listener technique or the XYZ. Pray. Ask God to help solve this thing. Ask God to calm your heart. Ask God to treat your spouse kindly. Ask God that your words are from Him, not from your sinful nature. You work at solving the problem. Oh, by the way, let me go back. Discuss the problem. Research, listen to this. It's an amazing statistic. Research at the University of Denver found that 70% of issues couples deal with don't need to be solved, just discussed. Think about that. When you have what you think is an issue, and if you'll take the time to discuss it, and say, you know, why did you do that? I want to understand, and I want you to understand. 70% of the issues never go farther than that. But most people don't stop to discuss a problem or communicate effectively. So you work to solve the problem, agenda setting. What do you want to accomplish? You say, okay, we got this problem. What do we want to accomplish in solving it? What is the problem, and what would make the problem go away? Brainstorming, what can we do to make it go away? Agreement and compromise, and then follow-up. Agreement and compromise. So what do we want to do? Some ways we can get it done. Here's what we agree on, and I've compromised and you've compromised, so I didn't give in. I'm not feeling like I gave in all the way, because the person who has the most to lose will always give in the most. And then follow-up. Now, sometimes you go through this, and you're still in that 30% where you got a conflict. As I said at the very beginning, marriage research is like Ned and the first grade reader. It is basic stuff. It's just hard to do. So the first thing with conflict, schedule a specific place, time, and date for a couple meeting within the next week. Allow at least 30 minutes. List the specific issue or the problem for discussion. So you're going to define, you're going to discuss the issue you want to resolve. Why is that important? So you don't go off topic. What will happen if you don't write it down that we're going to discuss this? You'll discuss 15 others all jumbled together with a bunch of hidden issues. So we're going to deal with this one. It won't be the only one we ever deal with, and it won't be the last one. But here's a big front burner issue that we need to talk about. This is the one we're going to discuss. Now, you need to define it. You need to list specific issue. Not, I'm mad, let's talk. What was the XYZ thing? When you did this, in this situation, I felt this way. Now, by the way, if your husband has an issue and you don't think it's an issue, do you have an issue in your marriage? Yeah. So if you don't think it's an issue, it is an issue just because your spouse has the issue, because you guys are one. So they have an issue, you have an issue. All right. How do you each contribute to the problem? Without blaming each other, list the things you each do that have not helped to resolve the problem. So you're going to list the things that you do, not what your spouse does. But remember, you are always involved in the problem. It's never one-sided. Never is a hard word, but I would say very, 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 very seldom one-sided. List past attempts to resolve the issue that were not successful. Why would that be important? You don't have to repeat things you've tried in the past. Obviously, if you've tried them in the past, they didn't work if you're still there. So you don't have to do those again. Again, this is so basic, but as you're thinking about these, as you deal with an issue in your marriage, you may not have thought about all the ways you've tried to deal with it in the past until you really write them down and say, oh, yeah, we did try that. Yeah, we did try that. Yeah, we've tried that several times. We better try something else. Brainstorm. Pull your ideas and try to attain 5 possible solutions to the problem. Do not judge or criticize any of the suggestions at this point. You're brainstorming, so all is fair. Every opinion counts. Why would it be important to brainstorm and not criticize another's input? You're going to create more conflict. Now, what will the men in the room normally want to do at this point? Just fix it. I don't want to go through the rest of them. Let's just fix it. Good. Fixed. Good. Let's go. Let's get moving. So you're going to discuss and evaluate each of these possible solutions. Be as objective as you can. Talk about how useful and appropriate each suggestion might be for resolving your issue. Now think about that. Just that little exercise there, you are building acceptance into the process. You are accepting without criticism, directly or subtly, your spouse's input. All right? After you have expressed your feelings, select one solution that you both agree on to try. So it's a trial solution. You're not saying it is the solution. It's what we're going to try. Agree how you will each work toward the solution because, again, it's going to take both of you. You're a team. You solve problems as a team. Be specific as possible. Then you're going to set place, date, and time within the next week for another meeting to discuss your progress. And then pay close attention to each other as the week passes. If you notice your partner making a positive contribution toward the solution, praise his or her efforts. Now, does that sound like a lot of work? Yeah, it is, isn't it? Because marriage is hard work. And if any of you got in it thinking it wasn't, and you got sold a bill of goods, or you entered into it very, very foolishly. So since that's over and you're in it, just know this thing is hard work. Relationships are hard work. So here are the options. You can put the work in at solving the issue, or 5 years from now, you can still be keeping score. 10 years from now, you can still be avoiding, because remember, the person who has the most to lose will always give in the most. You can still be setting off arguments by trivial things, and you can still be arguing over the same things. And guess what you just did? You just taught your children how to deal with conflict. And then what do you think they're going to do? Same thing. It's not about you guys. It's not about me and Lori in our marriage. It's about God and how we're going to do it His way, so imperfectly, but how we're going to do it His way. And in doing that, we're going to teach our kids. They're going to see it. They're going to watch, and they're going to learn, and they're going to know they really love each other. And, you know, they had their arguments, but they always worked them out. And we heard them talk about forgiveness. They even ask us for forgiveness. Or, man, I can't remember how many times we discussed, they argued about that issue in the car on vacation or going to church or wherever. So you can spend a lot of time, some time investing in this issue of conflict resolution, or you can just carry with you these hidden issues of power and control and caring, recognition, commitment, integrity, avoidance. All right, I think I have one more thing and then we're finished. When you're faced with inevitable conflict, you can do one of the following. Here are your options. You can pretend the conflict doesn't exist. Just avoid it. Hurts too much to get into it. It takes too much energy. I've been there before. We didn't get it fixed. What's to think that we're going to get it fixed this time? So it just doesn't exist. You can allow it to drive a wedge between you because any significant conflict will. You're going to remember it. It's going to hurt. It's going to go down to that hidden issue list, and you're going to be feeling that, and you're going to be living with that. The dominant partner wins. You're the dominant partner, you always win. That can happen in a relationship. I'm tired of talking about it. That's it. Don't want to talk about it anymore. Boom. I'm out the door. I got the clicker to the TV. I'm turning the volume up. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. This is the way it's going to be. No matter what, dominant partner wins. The most emotional partner wins. So you can throw on the emotion and the guilt and all that stuff. Partner with the most to lose gives in. I've known many situations where, just for instance, there's an affair. And most of the time, when the affair continues, the wife will do everything she can to make that marriage work because she has the most to lose. She's going to lose financially. She's going to have to figure out how to go get a job and take care of the three kids. He's going to be moving to Ohio with his new wife. So she's going to be the one who will keep giving in the most because she has the most to lose. I've seen it happen on the other side too. It's an interesting situation today because if a husband leaves his wife with another woman, that woman probably left her husband for someone else. I mean, there's about 50-50 anymore. That's the extreme example. But if I'm always going to get hurt, if I know he's always going to, at some point in this conflict, throw a zinger at me, and it's going to stop me in my tracks, and I'm going to feel numb, and it's going to hurt that bad, I'm not going to go there. I've got the most to lose on that deal. Prayerfully follow the ground rules for conflict management. That's an option. Or the last one is seek biblical counseling and or a marriage mentor. If you're in a situation where you can't get over an issue and it's really causing conflict in your marriage and you follow the steps and it just doesn't work, then by all means, put down your pride and go see a good marriage counselor. It's not a pride thing. It's a wisdom thing. You're foolish if you don't go get help to deal with the most important relationship you have on this earth, second only to your relationship with Jesus Christ, the relationship between a husband and wife. So if you work through all these things and you can't get it fixed, then go get a third party to sit in, marriage mentor or biblical counselor.
And please stay with us. Ron returns in a few moments with a look at our next time together. Before that, we want you to know about his booklet, In the Beginning, A Biblical View of Sexuality. Many, both inside and outside the church, fail to realize that sex was designed by God, a beautiful gift to His creation. He meant it as an expression of love and for our enjoyment, but only when expressed as He intended. Sadly, our culture has distorted that intention. In this booklet, Ron counters that influence with a biblical worldview anchored in creation, the fall, and redemption. In the Beginning, A Biblical View of Sexuality is yours for a donation of any amount at ronmoore.org. Again, that address is ronmoore.org. Or you may call toll-free 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help keep the journey on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now here's Ron with a preview of our next broadcast.
Submission does not mean that the wife is in any way, shape, or form inferior to her husband. There is equality with husband and wife. Submission does not mean that the wife loses her identity and becomes a non-person. Submission does not mean the wife becomes a passive participant in the relationship. I never forget doing some premarital counseling with a couple one time. And when I went over this, the groom-to-be got really rigid. So I said, what's up with that? Well, his dad had died when he was about 3 years old. And his mom had married a strong believer, or so she thought, and there was abuse, all in the name of submission. Anytime you abuse a relationship, you are outside of what God has in mind.
We hope you can join us for that message next time. And remember to order your free copy of Ron's booklet, In the Beginning, A Biblical View of Sexuality. In its pages, you'll learn how to enjoy the gift of sex in marriage, resist temptation, and recover from sexual sin. In the Beginning, A Biblical View of Sexuality is available for a gift of any amount at ronmoore.org. That's ronmoore.org. Or you may call toll-free 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. By the way, if you miss any of the messages in this series, you'll find them on the front page of our website at ronmoore.org. And if the journey has brightened your day and deepened your walk with Christ, please tell your friends and family about our program. Also, keep in mind that the journey relies on your generous donations to keep this ministry on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Your gift today will be deeply appreciated. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron Moore next time as we walk together on The Journey.